You're about to hear a story that really reshapes how you might think about quiet strength. Welcome to The Deep Dive.
Great to be here.
Today, we're taking a journey, really, into the world of rural Moroccan women. It's through this powerful new book where the mountains whisper her name.
And this book, it's inspired by a documentary, right? A Tale of Dreams and Destinies.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's not just, you know, retelling the film. The author calls it something more.
Yeah.
Like transforming the film's silences into words.
Ah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's images into memory. It's emotion into testimony. It really asks us to slow down.
To listen more deeply.
Yeah. And to think about this question. What weight did she carry in her silence? It's quite profound.
And that's really our mission today, isn't it? To kind of dig into those narratives and pull out the key insights. Hmm. These women, they're described as keepers of memory, of land, of labor, of community. For generations, their stories were just whispers.
Passed down between grandmothers and granddaughters.
Exactly. But now the book says they are ink. It's finally written down. So this deep dive, it's a call to action for all of us, really.
How so?
To listen differently, to value deeply, to remember collectively.
Okay, so let's start unpacking that. There's this really powerful image right at the beginning of the documentary, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. The woman on the donkey.
Right. Riding alone. Mountain dust swirling. Yeah. On the surface, it seems so ordinary.
Unremarkable, yeah. Mm-hmm. Just a woman, a path, a donkey.
But when you look closer, or if you've ever felt constrain yourself, it's everything.
It's defiance.
Yes. Because to ride is to not remain. It's about carrying memory, refusal, and hope.
And what's so striking about that one image is how much it holds. It's about moving while constrained.
Dreaming while grounded.
Journeying while being told you shouldn't. It's a symbol for countless women there.
And it hints that change often starts really quietly.
Yeah, defiance isn't always loud. Sometimes it's just not standing still.
Yeah. And many of these quiet beginnings, as the book's prologue shows so powerfully, started with a morning that felt like an end.
That prologue is tough.
Yeah.
It describes a girl, just 14, and her schooling just stops. Abruptly.
Decided by others.
Yeah, decided by fathers, uncles, customs, silences. And she hears that phrase, school doesn't feed you.
Oof. Painful and common.
Terribly common. The author stresses this is not fiction. It is memory. And it is not hers alone. It belongs to thousands.
So a beginning that looked like an ending, but it sparked so much more.
Exactly. It sets the stage for everything that follows. Hashtag tag tag the deep dive into the chapters of change.
Okay, so we've seen those opening glimpses. Let's really get into the book now, into these chapters of quiet revolution.
Where should we start?
Let's look at chapter one first. It's about the social fabric in silent battles.
Right, the social ties in these villages.
Yeah, and they're more than just connections, aren't they? The book calls them destinies, intertwined fates.
And women carry this, what was it, an invisible ledger?
Yes, an invisible ledger of obedience and gratitude.
Yeah.
Like a hidden social score.
So any independence, like saying no to a marriage proposal or wanting to stay in school?
Or even just admitting you're unhappy in public?
That could essentially bankrupt you in the community.
Wow.
But these ties, they're double-edged, right? They constrain, but they're also lifelines. Women share secrets, support each other.
Mm-hmm. Still, the gender hierarchy is clear. There's that quote from Kadra.
Oh, yeah, the teenage girl. They tell me to obey, but no one asks me if I'm okay.
So direct. And tradition, even upheld by mothers sometimes.
Because they went through it, too. They might see endurance as just part of life. But the book is clear. Endurance is not the same as acceptance.
That's a key distinction. So how does the book show resistance?
Through these small, almost hidden acts, like Rykia teaching girls to read secretly.
Under the fig trees, away from everyone.
Yeah, or Aicha buying sanitary pads in the next village.
And hiding them in bread bags.
Exactly. The film apparently shows these moments without any narration.
Letting the actions speak for themselves.
Right. And the core challenge is that often no one thinks it's unjust. It's simply the way things are. Fear keeps things in place.
Fear of being excluded or shamed.
Mm-hmm. But change does happen. Slowly, gently.
Like when a mother lets her daughter finish school.
Yes. Or a girl refuses marriage at 15. It's like they're subtly reweaving tradition.
And it leaves you with that really provocative question.
What if obedience is no longer the only way to survive?
Exactly. That really sticks with you. Which leads nicely into the next theme, the sheer weight of responsibility, especially for girls. Miriam's story in chapter 2.
Ah, yes. Responsibility arriving early.
And it's inherited, not negotiated. She was 12 when her brother left, and suddenly her duties just exploded.
Became part of her bones, as the book says. Yeah. Because in these places, sacrifice is the language of womanhood. Her mother, her grandmother, they sacrificed. Now it was her turn.
But even under all that, she developed this quiet brilliance, didn't she?
She did. Fixing things, making nourishing meals from almost nothing. But that quote from her, it's powerful.
Which one?
I'm not weak. I'm just tired of being strong for everyone.
Wow. That hits hard. It shows the cost of that resilience.
Absolutely.
And now there's this new question starting to bubble up. What if responsibility was shared?
And the book notes these small shifts starting to happen.
Fathers helping with water, brothers maybe washing dishes.
Tiny things, yeah. Not revolutions, more like breaks in the wall.
But crucial breaks.
Because responsibility might still be heavy, but when it's shared, even a little, that changes everything. It ripples outwards.
Okay, so building on those shifts, chapter 3 talks about the power of a shared dream. It starts with this whisper.
The whisper of oil under the village.
Yeah, and suddenly, eyes that had long stared downward began to rise toward the horizon.
People started dreaming big.
Kids imagining towers, women dreaming of clean water, bathrooms with locks.
Old men planning marble floors for the mosque.
Huge dreams. But then...
nothing happened. Just nothing. No oil trucks, just another dry season.
So how did they handle that disappointment?
Yeah.
Because it could have just crushed them.
That's the fascinating part. Instead of despair, something else emerged. A unified desire. A common purpose, not based on wealth.
And that led to action.
Immediately, Fatima Zahra, the young teacher, suggests digital literacy workshops. The village chief says, it's time to act.
And the cooperative starts from our village with hope.
Great name. And everyone chipped in, right? Men offered trucks, teenagers used their phones.
Someone even donated a solar panel.
And Amina, the basket weaver, she summed it up perfectly. The oil was just the spark, but we are the fire.
Love that.
The dream didn't die. It transformed. It became about shared ambition, choice, reclaiming things.
Not just land, but voice and time.
Yeah, and that little girl's dream, finding oil, not for riches, but to build a school so no girl ever leaves her dreams underground.
From individual wealth to collective empowerment. Amazing. Okay, let's move to chapter 4, Khadija's Kitchen, A Revolution in the Everyday. We meet Khadija.
The widow who saw a different kind of hunger.
A hunger deeper than food. A hunger for purpose. Her idea was simple, but brilliant. Turn couscous making into a business.
And it started so small. A shed. 6 women, 1 gas burner.
And that name they chose. Tamazert and Tamkart.
The land of women. Half defiance, half blessing.
And that cooperative, it became so much more than just a place to work.
Oh yeah. A classroom, a mirror, a stage, and a home.
Women learned practical skills budgets, negotiating.
Even Facebook.
Right. But also, it was this emotional space, wasn't it? For honesty, sharing stories, a sanctuary.
Fatima, the oldest one, said it beautifully. At home, I am nobody. Here, I am part of something.
That sense of belonging.
And the real currency wasn't just the money, it was confidence.
Though there was pushback from some husbands.
Of course. But Khadija's response was defiant. They can mock us, but they cannot unlearn what we've discovered, that internal strength.
And the story of Salma, Amina's daughter. Going from avoiding the shed to running their Instagram.
Yes. Her quote is fantastic. My mother taught me how to make couscous. I taught her how to go viral.
Incredible intergenerational exchange.
So the cooperative, it's this quiet, powerful, nourishing movement. It didn't start with oil or big programs.
Just 6 women, a bowl, and a decision. We matter, we build, we begin.
You pure agency.
Now, chapter 5, Reclaiming a Lost Girlhood, focuses on Ayika's story.
Married at 15. No ceremony for it. Her voice just didn't count.
Years of silence, duty. She literally forgot how to speak in full sentences.
Unimaginable. But the turning point came with her daughter, Yasmin.
When Yasmin failed math and said, I'm too stupid.
Yeah. That phrase for Ayika, it cut deeper than any insult. It echoed her own lost potential.
And it pushed her to do something incredible.
To walk to the literacy center, which must have taken immense courage.
And the instructor's words. You're not late, you're just ready. So welcoming.
So powerful. Ayika learned slowly, but she kept going. And she brought Yasmin with her.
Creating this bond based on learning together, not just hierarchy.
Right. And that moment, she signed Yasmin's field trip form with her own note.
Take care. Enjoy. I love you.
Yasmin said, that note felt like freedom. You can just feel the weight lift.
So Aisha didn't get her childhood back, but she reclaimed something vital.
The right to grow again. She became the woman who learned to read, helping others, journaling.
And she says, writing is like breathing now. I never want to go back to silence.
It underlines that core idea. When a woman begins to learn, a cycle begins to break. It's about so much more than just reading and writing.
Okay, shifting from personal reclamation to economics, chapter 6, Dust to Dollars, Rural Entrepreneurship.
And Nada's story. 32, unmarried, and often underestimated.
But she saw potential where others saw waste. Literally, animal dung.
On dry, cracked land, her idea. Turned goat manure into organic fertilizer.
With no degree, no training, just instinct.
People mocked her at first, right?
They did. But an NGO saw the potential and supported her. And her brand name.
Akal Nilkir, land of goodness. Perfect.
And she succeeded. Made more money than her brother.
Which must have caused a stir.
Definitely. And it inspired other women. Soap making, embroidery, baking. The training was simple, often just in homes.
But women came because someone finally asked them, what do you want to build?
Such a crucial question.
Oh.
And what did they want to build?
Agency, income, recognition, respect. Some wanted independence from their husbands.
Some just wanted simple things like buying their own soap without shame.
But mostly, to stop asking permission, that's huge. It's about reclaiming that inherent right to choose.
Nada kept going, learned WhatsApp business, made marketing videos.
Holding up the fertilizer and saying,
This is not dirt, this is future. Just brilliant.
So entrepreneurship here, it's not just business, it challenges everything.
Gender roles, generational trauma, isolation.
Yeah, it tells women you don't have to leave your village to change your life.
And for Nada, success meant,
I no longer feel invisible, it means I can name my future. Powerful stuff.
Now, chapter 7, The Art of Mixing Lives. This one uses the kitchen as a metaphor.
A sacred archive. Huh. And cooking becomes authorship.
With couscous at the center, representing layers, effort, identity, life.
And you have the traditional way, led by Fatima the Elder. Machines kill spirit.
You want couscous with soul? You make it with your breath.
Beautiful. But there's also innovation. Amina suggesting carob powder, then turmeric.
Creating the couscous of change. I love that name.
It really captures it because mixing ingredients becomes symbolic of mixing other things.
Roles, generations, different visions of womanhood.
Exactly. You see this negotiation. Older women valuing caution, ritual, younger ones embracing risk, digital recipes.
Like the debate over the dried meat for the festival, classic versus modern.
Yeah. And the decision to make both kinds, that decision echoes far beyond the kitchen.
So food becomes a way to talk about difficult things.
Absolutely, a form of dialogue. They discuss land rights, climate change, even love, all while preparing food. It's a safe space.
And that child saying, she makes couscous that changes minds.
It shows culture isn't static. It's dynamic, constantly being adjusted, rolled gently, steamed again, tested, fluffed until it feels right.
Change doesn't arrive like a protest.
It comes in a plate. Unexpected, but deeply effective.
Okay, finally, chapter 8. The cold, the courage, the comeback. This brings us Ahmed.
29 years old, back in a cold, cracked classroom.
Still feeling the regret of leaving school at 14.
And the trigger was realizing he couldn't read his sister's poem. The shame burned, he said.
So he decided to go back. Not for a piece of paper.
For himself. And he hears those same words Aika heard. You're not late. You're just ready.
Seems to be a theme at that center.
A powerful message of acceptance.
He struggled, right? Physical pain, teenagers laughing at him.
But he kept showing up. Consistency. And that earned him respect.
And inspired others. Villagers started thinking, maybe I should go too.
It's never too late. He became this quiet role model.
And his goal for the future, it wasn't grand, but it was so meaningful.
I want to read a contract before I sign it. Simple statement, but it holds.
Decades of potential injustice.
Exactly. It's about agency. The right to understand, choose, question, reclaiming control.
And he started tutoring another student, helping the teacher. He grew so much.
That moment he read aloud, and the whole class applauded. You can feel the significance.
So his story reinforces that education, especially when you return to it.
It's about reclamation, voice, confidence, dignity. He calls himself a beginner.
which is such a humble, powerful way to see it. A lesson for all of us, really.
Yeah.
Hashtag tag tag outro. So pulling all these threads together from this deep dive, it's clear, isn't it? Change doesn't always shout.
No, often it whispers.
It's found in these unexpected places, valleys between forgotten hills, on dusty roads walked barefoot, in villages without postcodes.
And these women, they're not statistics, not case studies, not beneficiaries.
No.
They are authors of income, of identity, of impact. They're not asking for permission anymore.
They're asking for space.
Exactly.
And it really makes you think, development isn't just about roads and electricity, is it?
Not at all. It's about whether a woman knows she can say no. Whether a girl believes her dream matters.
Whether a grandmother remembers dignity. And yes.
It's also about couscous.
It is. It all connects.
And the echo of this change is spreading. You see young girls speaking up, boys helping with chores, fathers bragging about daughters who code.
Women walking firmer.
Yeah. It's this counterforce to poverty, to injustice. Built from classrooms, logos, WhatsApp groups, songs, emails. Even legal documents now.
They don't just need help.
They need witnesses, people to see and acknowledge their journey.
So when we ask what change looks like in these mountains, the answer isn't one big thing.
No, it's many small vital things.
Like a chalkboard being wiped clean.
A girl saying no and being allowed to say it again.
A woman stirring couscous with one hand while sending a voice note with the other.
Love that image. A community center filling with light.
A man listening. That's huge.
A child asking, can boys cook too? And the answer, finally, being yes.
It's profound. So as we wrap up, here's something to think about.
Mm-hmm.
What dust are you walking with today that might just be the ground for a future dream?